Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time. You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down. Who's man? Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concession stand. You going to the bathroom. Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to be some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, if you guys are getting your seats, I'm singing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's time to... I put down the babies, put down the pepperoni.
Let's go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, game time!
Welcome to another Parents Coaching Parent Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, M.H. Scott. And parents, for those of y'all that's out there that's listening, I promise you another exciting show this evening. We got some experts on the line this evening that's going to give you some information that many of you have probably been wondering, where do I get this information, how do I get started, and all these other things. As you know, the Parent Coaching Parent Network is here to support you, parents, as well as your student-athletes in your pursuit of athletic scholarships. We're here to make sure that you have a better understanding of the recruiting process and the scholarship process as well. But, you know, here I am doing all this talking. I can't start my show without first hearing something from my man, Mr. Keith Wright. Keith, where you at?
Student of the game, had people front and talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know what would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then be ball would do the same. I can't complain the situation that I'm in. Meeting different connects that turn out to be my friend. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, let them hate then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and the knowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
Currently a student at the University of Harvard. He is currently playing basketball there as well. So if you get a chance to check out Harvard, catch him on TV, look for my man, Mr. Keith Wright. He did that piece for me some time ago, and I use that as our opening piece every time. Because one thing he says in that message, he makes smart cool. So it's okay to be cool to athletes. It's okay to be cool to students. It's okay to be cool at any time. Parents, if you want to call in this evening, you can give us a call at 646-929-2416. I'll say the number again, 646-929-2416. Call in, because this evening, I guarantee you, we're going to have some information for you that you've probably been looking for, probably wondering where to go to get it, and how and who can help you find it. So we have the NCAA Eligibility Center, a representative, an expert on this evening to help us out with those questions. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about a few things. You know, as always, we have some things always going on with the Parent Coaching Parent Network. As we have this show this week, next week we will have another great show. We have a gentleman on that wrote a book about different things that goes on in college sports. It's a fiction book, but it's a very interesting book and something for you parents to listen in and chime in and give us some feedback on. But one of the big events we have coming up, the Parents Coaching Parent Network, we host our annual Celebration of Athletes. Our Celebration of Athletes this year, for those of you in the Hampton Roads area that's listening to this show, our Celebration of Athletes this year will be on December 5th, December 5th. Parents, athletes, take a look at the Parent Coaching Parent Network Facebook page, and you'll see that information up there. I'll be posting up an event as well, so you can check that out. And from there, I hope that you come out and support the Celebration of Athletes. Yes, it is a free event, and we will be talking about some of the things that we'll cover this evening as well. Again, Celebration of Athletes, December 5th, 2010, here in Chesapeake for all Hampton Roads athletes. First come, first serve, because space is limited. Start signing up. Send me an email at parents at pcphr@aol.com, and I'll make sure that we got you listed as coming to this event. All right, folks, I know we're excited about hearing from the NCAA, so we're going to go ahead and see if our guest is still on the line with us this evening. Let me see if we got our guest out there. Brad, are you out there?
I'm here.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Welcome to the Parents, Coach, and Parents Network. Hey, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your time, your off time, because I'm quite sure you're off work round about now, sharing your off time with us and sharing some of your expertise with us as well. Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. I work at the NCAA National Office here in Indianapolis. Former student athlete at the University of Cincinnati, played baseball at Cincinnati, and have been working as an administrator in athletics for about the last 13 years in the rules compliance portion of athletics administration, and have been here at the NCAA for the last 10 years.
Okay. So you say you are a former student athlete. So this must be something... A passion that you have to be involved in the sports. What sport did you play during your time period?
I was a baseball player.
A baseball player. Okay. Well, we got some baseball players that's probably going to call in this evening as well, and that's a great thing. Hey, but one of the things that before we get into the questions, what is the Eligibility Center? You know, I know that you say you've been with the program for, you said, last 10 years?
That's correct.
Here recently, and you maybe you can tell me the exact date, not the exact date, but, during the time period, it was once called the Clearinghouse. When did it change over from Clearinghouse to Eligibility Center?
About 3 years ago, the certification of initial eligibility changed from the NCAA Clearinghouse to the NCAA Eligibility Center, and the biggest difference during that change was really the location of the office that took care of that function. It moved from Iowa City to here in Indianapolis. So it was about 3 years ago.
Oh, okay. So the biggest change was relocating everybody. And put the new name above the door.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. That's the easy thing. That's the easy thing. So I take it from that point on, all the functions stayed the same, all the responsibilities stayed the same. No big difference happened in the office, anything like that. So that's good. That's good. Now, let's go into some questions. What exactly is the Eligibility Center? What is the purpose of the Eligibility Center from the NCAA standpoint?
Well, the Eligibility Center is the is a group of staff members, and they are the ones who certify the academic eligibility of students who want to participate in their first year in college and in college sports. They also, in addition to the academic eligibility, they also certify that the students are amateur students. There is now an amateurism component to what the Eligibility Center does, and so there's really a two-pronged analysis that goes into determining whether or not a student is eligible. There's the academic process and the amateurism process, and both of those play out at the Eligibility Center.
Okay. So the Eligibility Center is place that they all need to send their information or make sure that their information gets to the eligibility center so the eligibility center can determine on whether or not they are qualified. Am I correct in assuming that much?
Yes. The eligibility center has a has an online registration that all of the students who want to play as freshmen in college have to go through that online system and register and fill out information on their academic eligibility and their amateurism eligibility.
Okay. Now, when you said that they are they become eligible, and that's eligible to participate in both practices and games and things of that nature, correct?
Right, right. The students have to, based on their academic achievement in high school, they have to meet. I think most of your listeners understand they have to meet certain academic requirements in order to be eligible to practice and play that first year, as well as receive athletic scholarships.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that academic requirement. I know that there is a number of core classes that's required, and there's been quite a few of parents that called in, and we've talked about that particular aspect. But give us a little bit more breakdown on how all that's set up as far as Division I, Division II, and Division III is concerned.
Sure. In Division I, the student would have to require completion of 16 core courses. And those core courses include 4 years of English, 3 years of math, 2 years of natural science, one additional year of English, math, or science, 2 years of social sciences, and then 4 years of additional courses, such as foreign language and things of that nature. And the key to remember about the core courses is that each high school has a list of core courses that meet the requirements. And so as a student is preparing for going to college and potentially playing sports, it's critical that they are taking courses that are on that core course list and that they do that early in their high school career so that they don't have to scramble in the junior and senior year to make up all of those courses. Those courses generally are going to they have to be college preparatory level courses. So it's really important that you space those out appropriately throughout the entire high school career. You mentioned Division II. Division II requires 14 core courses at this particular moment, but that is moving to 16 core courses for students who are going to be starting in 2013. So you have the core courses. Then each student has to take an ACT or an SAT test and meet a minimum score. And in Division I, the score that you're required to achieve is matched up on a scale with your GPA in those 16 core courses. So the higher your GPA in those core courses, the more room you have to have a lower SAT or ACT test score. In Division II, there's simply a minimum test score of 68 some in ACT and an 820 on the SAT. There is not a sliding scale, so to speak, that relates your test score with your core course GPA in Division II. And then finally, in Division III, each Division III school certifies the initial eligibility of their student athletes. There is not a national standard that is certified by the Eligibility Center. So I know that was a lot of information, but I'm happy to recap any of that if you have specific questions.
Okay. I haven't seen anybody chime in with any questions yet. I have a number of callers just listening.
Sure.
I guess I'm kind of nervous on that. Call in and ask some questions. But I'm quite sure that we're going to get to the point where there may be some questions come up. Again, callers, if you want to call in and ask some questions, we have Brad on from the Elderbility Center. You can give us a call at 646-929-2416. 646-929-2416. Now, I'll finish on with a few other questions. You mentioned something about core courses. Can the core courses change?
Yeah, the core courses can change over time as a high school offers additional courses or takes courses off of their curriculum. Each year, the high schools across the country update their core course list appropriately, and so it's really important that, you know, as a student interested in playing college sports is going through their high school career, that they're continuing to have a good dialogue with their counselor to ensure that those courses that they are taking are core courses.
Okay, and you mentioned with the counselor, I noticed looking at the website, there was a particular individuals listed as points of contact. Now, are those individuals, my first question is, do they have an individual listed at each high school as an NCAA point of contact, or how does that work?
Each high school probably does have an individual that is responsible for updating and being a liaison with the eligibility center. I don't know what each high school off the, you know, what their contacts are, but certainly there is somebody at the high school in usually in the guidance office who is responsible for being that contact person. It may also be, you know, someone such as a coach or the athletic director at the high school may also know who that person is.
Yes, exactly. And that's the point I try to get across to the parents oftentimes, that there is an individual at each school that has that responsibility. And I refer them oftentimes to their athletic director to at least make that initial contact with him or her just to get started. And you mentioned something about core courses being changed and updated each year. You know, I had a situation a few years back where a athlete came to me, a parent came to me, and had a concern about they had just moved to a new area, a new city. They had transferred all their information. They had a copy of, you know, their previous transcript and some of the classes that was listed on their previous transcript wasn't listed on the current school's list of core courses. How does that work?
Yeah, generally speaking, the courses that students get credit for are those that are taken at that particular high school. So in a transfer situation, you know, as a general rule, if they took courses at the first school that are on the first school's list of core courses, they will get credit for those. Oftentimes when you have transfer situations, the transcripts may be difficult to decipher where courses were taken, and the individuals at the new high school may have to communicate with the eligibility center staff to ensure that everything is documented appropriately so that the eligibility center staff can then look at the transcript and give the appropriate credit for that particular student situation.
Okay.
Well,
that sounds like a very
good one. And
basically what you just told the parents, that they need to make sure that they look at the core course list for their previous school in order to make that determination, correct?
Yeah, ultimately, you know, the eligibility center is going to determine whether or not the courses a student has taken are core courses as has been documented with the eligibility center by each of the high schools. It's really, I agree, it's really important that parents and students are communicating directly with counselors and in many cases athletic directors or coaches at the high school to ensure that all the documentation is consistent and is provided to the eligibility center in a timely fashion so that those can be handled appropriately and not at the last minute.
Okay. You mentioned something that I've been trying to stress over the last 5 years during the time we had our program up and running, and I've heard you say it a couple times now, and just want you to reemphasize that point. How important is it for parents to be involved in the process?
It's critical. It's critical to have the parents involved, to have coaches involved in communicating with the student. I think we all understand that students in during the high school years need a nudge every now and then, need some guidance on what it is they should be doing, and help keep them on track. So it's critical that parents are involved in the process, whether it be the eligibility process or the recruiting process. As much as the parents can be involved, generally that leads to positive outcomes for the student.
Okay. Well, that leads me right into my next question. Is the process the same for every sport?
The initial
The
initial eligibility rules in terms of the amateurism status and the academic status are the same in every sport, particularly on the academic side. There are some rules on the amateurism side that vary by sport based on competition after competitive opportunities after high school that are taken advantage of. But in general, the rules are the same for each sport.
Okay. Just for general information, what are some of the sports that receive more scholarships? Or what are some of the sports? Yeah, I guess that's my question.
Yeah, the sports that offer, you know, financial aid or athletic scholarships to more students are those that are your sports that are sponsored by more schools. Obviously, if more schools sponsor them, more scholarships are available. So you're looking at sports like football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, soccer, volleyball. Those are the sports that have the highest participation numbers, and thus they give the most athletic scholarships in terms of numbers. It is important for parents to understand that there are only about 2% of the high school athletes receive a college scholarship to play college sports. So it is a very small number relative to the number of high school athletes in the country. And so while there may be other opportunities to play without a scholarship, having realistic expectations about those opportunities is also critical as a student is going through the high school years, and I guess really emphasizes how important the academic achievement is. Because the number of scholarships available is relatively small.
Okay. You heard that, parents. You heard that the percentage is very low. So, you know, this information, if you're not taking notes and you don't have questions, I'm not sure if you're really serious about trying to receive an athletic scholarship for your student athlete. Because at this point, we've talked about so many different things that the questions should be jumping right out of the top of your head, trying to find out what we're going to talk about next. You mentioned something a second ago, and you were talking about athletic scholarships. What is the difference between a full and a partial?
Yeah, a full scholarship is a scholarship that will pay for tuition and fees. It'll pay for room and meals, and it will pay for the students' books for the courses they're enrolled in. A partial scholarship, on the other hand, will only pay for a portion of those categories. An athletic scholarship can only cover tuition and fees, room and meals, and books, whereas a partial scholarship will maybe just cover tuition, or they may just cover your room and your meals. They may even just cover your books. So it really goes along the entire spectrum there if a student is on a partial scholarship.
Okay. You hear that, parents? And he didn't mention anything about a full scholarship being for all 4 years and all these other crazy myths that's going around out there that, you know, you get to the school and the coach promised you a full scholarship so you know that your child is eligible and going to play for all 4 years. What happens year after year, sir?
You raise a great point. The athletic scholarships are only allowed to be awarded for a maximum of 1 year. And so every year that scholarship is subject to being renewed by the school. So it is possible that after 1 year, the school can decide not to renew the scholarship, and they can do that at the end of a year for any reason they deem appropriate. Now, they have to offer an appeal process, but it is important to understand that those scholarships are one-year agreements.
One-year agreement. Let's stress that point, parents. One-year agreement. So when you get that, get to the point and you're sitting down and you're talking to that coach, and that coach mentioned, yeah, we got him taken care of, Ms. Jones, and we're going to offer him a full scholarship. Don't start thinking that full scholarship and you done got it all taken care of for the next 4 years, because that's not the case. 1 year at a time. Things that can possibly bring that scholarship to a halt or that scholarship not be renewed. If the grades seem to have some problems with the grades, I've seen that happen. Am I correct there, Brad?
Yeah, a school can certainly cancel the scholarship if the student becomes ineligible or is not progressing towards their degree appropriately. There are NCAA rules and standards for progress towards that degree, and if a student falls short, the school can cancel that scholarship.
Okay, that scholarship can be canceled. Parents, please know that. Please understand that. Please document that and make sure that you remember that when you're sitting down and you're talking with that coach. Next question that I have for you, sir, and I need for you to give me not no great detail, but enough detail to give us a better understanding of how it works. Talking about the recruiting calendar, we're talking about the dead period, quiet period, and evaluation period. Yes, parents, I just gave you my answer to last week's question because none of you called in to answer that question, but that's all right. We're going to have another one sometime soon. But if you can give us a little something on each one of them, Brad, it'd be greatly appreciated.
Sure. And there is information on the NCAA website about each of these periods and trying to determine what dates that each of these periods occur in. But I'll give a quick overview of each period. A contact period is a period of time where coaches are allowed to have contacts in person in a student's home or can go and evaluate and watch games. An evaluation period is a time where coaches are only allowed to go watch games, but they can't have contact in somebody's home. A quiet period is when a coach cannot go watch games, cannot go have in-person contact in somebody's home, but they are allowed to have contact with a student on their campus, on their college campus. A dead period is a period of time where the coach can't go watch games, they can't have contact in somebody's home, and they can't have contact on their own college campus. They can, though, call a student that they're recruiting, and they can write to a student that they're recruiting during a dead period. So that's a quick overview of each period.
Okay. Now, our question is that period basically the same for every sport?
It is not the same. Each sport has their own periods of time where it's a dead period. Not every sport has a full recruiting calendar where all of those periods are specifically outlined. But your sports like football and basketball and volleyball and baseball do have calendars that outline specifically when each of those periods occur throughout the year.
Okay. Is soccer considered one of those sports? And I had that question pop up the other day in a little workshop that I had.
Does soccer have a recruiting calendar? Is that the question?
Yes, sir.
They don't have a recruiting calendar.
Okay, so that means that the coach can evaluate, contact the student-athlete basically at any point in time? How does that work?
Yeah, soccer will have a dead period that surrounds their national letter of intent signing periods. But other than that, coaches will be able to watch games and will be able to have contacts in the homes of students. The one thing for parents to remember is that coaches have a limit on the number of times they can watch or have in-home contact with a student. So the coaches can't show up at the house, you know, every week for the entire year. They do have limits on how much they can do that. And those vary by sport as well.
All right. We're going to jump back to a question that I had pop up here on somebody just sent me a text. I don't know why they just don't call in and ask the question themselves. But the question came up was, how many times can a student athlete take a standardized test, SAT or the ACT?
The student can take the test as many times as he or she wants to take it. The key to remember, though, if they want that test to be used for initial eligibility purposes, it has to be on a national testing date, and they have to have those results sent directly to the eligibility center from the testing agency. And when they sign up for a standardized test, the SAT or the ACT, they can identify as a place to send their test results, they can identify the eligibility center. So the test has to be on a national testing date, and they have to have those results sent directly to the eligibility center.
All right, parents, I hope you are taking notes because, you know, we cover this information quite often, but you're getting it from the expert today. So if you come back and have that question and I'm not able to answer it, I'm still going to go back to Brad and try to get that question answered. Brad, we're going to pause for a second here and give you a chance to take a little breather while I run this quick commercial, and then we're going to come back with some more questions there. So you okay with that?
I'm fine.
Okay. All right. We're going to break for a question real quick. Parents Coach and Parent Network will be right back. We're going to talk to our folks after.
Are you a high school student seeking a college athletic scholarship? Do you have questions concerning the college recruiting process? Have you asked yourself any of these questions? Who do I contact for a scholarship? What are the rules concerning athletic recruiting? What schools are best for me? Apogees.com allows high school athletes the tools to showcase their athletic skills to college coaches. Go to Apogees.com. That's Apogees.com. They will help you navigate the college recruiting process for free. Apogees, the right college, right choice for the right student athlete.
Parents, you know, like I always tell you, that was my folks, Apogees, coming out of the great state of Texas, and they are a free recruiting process. They will help you get a better understanding and help you work right through the recruiting process from A to Z. Check them out at www.apogeesradio.com, www.apogeesradio.com. All right, and Apogees, just in case you're wondering what word that is, I'm going to spell it for you. Spell Apogeez. Don't ask me what it means and where it came from. Check with Coach Rodney and Ms. Vivian the next time they call into the show. But if you want to give us a call, you have any questions, we're talking with Mr. Brad from the NCAA. He's one of the directors there at the NCAA, and he's here. Giving us a better understanding of the recruiting process, you can give us a call at 646-929-2416. 646-929-2416. Are you still there, Brad?
I'm still here.
We appreciate you, sir. We definitely appreciate you.
Sure.
While we were at a little quick break there, I had another text message pop up, and I don't know, again, why they don't call in and just ask the question themselves. I guess they figure I can ask the question for them. Give us some information on amateurism, because I noticed that popped up here over the last few years, and that's been a really big question about amateurism and things of that nature. What is amateurism?
Sure. But amateurism is really one of the real fundamental principles of the intercollegiate athletics model, and it really is a set of rules that ensure that those who are playing college sports are playing it for the love of the game and are primarily playing to get better athletically, but also to achieve academically. With the understanding that they're not going to be playing sports for the rest of their life, and that getting an education is critical to life after playing sports. And the one piece of amateurism that everybody always, I think, refers to is the pay for play. And the amateurism rules are there to ensure that those who are playing college sports have not paid or not have not played previously for pay, so that they have maintained their amateur status. In order to certify that amateur status so that every school across the country has the exact same information about every student that they're recruiting, there's an online questionnaire that a student has to fill out with the eligibility center that asks questions about contracts with professional teams, expenses to play on teams, potential issues with agents, and those types of activities are asked about on this questionnaire to ensure that the student is an amateur prior to playing in college.
Okay, made that perfectly clear. And I was going to follow up with the question on give us a little bit more on that pay-for-play statement that you made, but I think you just cleared it up, and I know for a fact it's clear, pretty clear, on the questionnaire.
Yeah, it's really a matter of simply being able to certify that the student has never played sports and received more than their required expenses for participating in that practice or that competition with their teams.
Okay, that's clear enough, parents. If you don't understand that, give us a call, ask a question, call in, send us a message. We even got the chat room open today, so if you got a question, you can also go to the chat room and type in your question there, and we can still address that question here this evening. Let's keep popping up on me. But you still there, sir?
I'm still here, yeah.
Because computer is doing something strange right now, and I'm not quite sure what it is, so I wanted to make sure it disconnected. But we talked enough about the initial eligibility. We talked some about amateurism. Let's talk a little bit more about the recruiting process. And I know all that ties in together, but oftentimes I think where parents fall short is having a better understanding of the recruiting process as far as when is their child actually considered being recruited. You know, they think they receive a postcard in the mail, you know, some generic mail. Hey, my son or my daughter's being recruited. Let's talk a little bit about that if you got a second.
Sure. That certainly is the first step in the recruiting process is the, you know, the mail that comes in, the generic postcard or the handwritten note. That certainly is the first step, but I think you're right. You know, parents will certainly see the activity increase dramatically during the junior year if the student is legitimately being recruited by a particular school. That may include some phone calls in certain sports. For example, in basketball, there's the ability to call students during their junior year. Other sports, they have to wait until after the junior year is over to call. But the amount of mail, the amount of messages by email will certainly rise dramatically during that junior and senior year if there is legitimate interest on the part of the college. I would say that just like it is in the academic side and preparing for the process through the Eligibility Center, it's important for parents to be involved with their son or daughter in the recruiting process. It can be a very stressful process. It can include a lot of different schools coming from different directions, and it's important to understand that you as a student, you as a parent, can have control over that process. You can put appropriate limits on how often the phone calls come in. And I would say that in order to manage that appropriately, have some good conversation among the family on what schools you really have an interest in. Coaches don't like to be led along thinking that somebody is interested in them, just like a student wouldn't want a coach to just continue to call if they're not interested in the student. Does that make sense?
Exactly. I've stressed that point several times myself. You know, if you're not interested in that school, then, you know, let that be known. Maybe the school is too far out of range for you, or, you know, you don't want your child to be that far away from home, or, you know, don't lead the coach on. You know, he can move on to the next prospect that he has, and as a result, everybody goes away happy. So that definitely makes sense. So they received that piece of correspondence, postcard, handwritten note, you know, whatever, a letter, whatever. Okay, so they receive that. Everybody gets excited. Should they respond right away? Is that something that they should do right away, or is that something that they should wait to see if they get a next piece of correspondence, or does it pick up?
Well, I think it depends on the nature of the correspondence. If it's a camp brochure, for example, and they want, you know, your son or daughter to come to a camp, and that's something that's of interest, certainly respond. Go to the camp, see if you like what they have to offer that way. They obviously can't recruit you yet at that camp, but you can certainly get a feel for the coaching staff and the campus during a camp. If it's a letter saying that they're coming to watch you play, and you start to get letters after each of your games talking about how well you must have played, and they saw your stats, and, you know, that's when you'll really see who is interested in recruiting you to that level. Once you get towards the end of that junior year and into the summer of the junior year, coaches may start talking about asking you to come for official visits during your senior year in high school. And at that point, you know that those schools are pretty serious because, as you know, official visits are visits that the school can pay for. And if they're spending money recruiting you, then they certainly have a high level of interest.
Okay. Now, you started talking about visits. How many visits do an athlete get?
You can take 5 official visits. Those are visits that the school pays the expenses for you as a student. You can take as many unofficial visits as you want to, and those unofficial visits can even happen during the freshman, sophomore, junior years because those are visits that the student is paying for or the family is paying for themselves. And so there's an unlimited number of those. As long as you're not trying to make contact with the coaches during a dead period on their campus, which is something we talked about earlier.
Okay. Now, here's a situation that I ran into, and I wasn't quite sure what the answer was. I had to reach out to somebody for some assistance on this one here, and I think Mr. Greg Turner helped me later on down the line. I had a student athlete that had took 2-3 visits during their senior year in high school. Turned around and went to a prep school. And this was about 3 years back before, you know, they start saying, okay, prep school, da-da-da-da. Went to prep school and was wondering how many visits was he offered, how many visits could he take at that time?
After graduating from high school and going to prep school?
Yes, sir.
The student has the 5 official visits during the high school, and you can go no more than one time to a particular school. there is a separate limit to the period after August 15th, or I'm sorry, October 15th, once a student graduates from high school. So they have 5 visits during their high school, and then after they've left high school and enroll elsewhere, whether it's a 2-year college or a prep school, they can have 5 more official visits at that point.
Okay. So all actuality, they can get up to 10 visits if they pace it right.
Yeah, they can get a maximum of 10 visits. They would only be getting the additional the second set of 5 visits if they open up the recruiting process a second time around after they've graduated from high school and enrolled somewhere else, whether it be a prep school or a 2-year college.
Gotcha. Exactly. All right. All right, parents, I hope you're listening and getting this information down and taking some very copious notes there. Again, if you have any questions for us, give us a call at 646-929-2416. 646-929-2416. This is the Parent Coaching Parent Network. And we have our special guest on this evening. And he's been on with us for the last... Oh, time is flying when you're having fun there, Brad. We've been on for almost an hour now. We've been on for at least the last 40-something minutes or so. And we'll be on for about another 5 more minutes before we shut it down. I see a few more callers have called in. Switchboard is starting to light up, but I don't see anybody with any questions. If you have any questions, this is the time to ask that question. We have an expert from the NCAA to answer all your questions. Another question that I have for you, sir, and you know, I can go on and all day long with the questions. Another question I have for you. We talked about official visits. We talked about unofficial visits. You know, as many times as they want to, and contact, and that type of stuff. How valuable is, when talking about the recruiting process again, that athlete providing that coach with that, and I know this part here has little to do with the NCAA, but I know you're probably familiar with it being a student athlete yourself. How valuable is it for the athlete to provide that coach with a profile or athletic resume and that highlight tape or reel or anything of that nature?
I think that there is value in providing highlight tapes to coaches. I think it is important to understand that coaches, particularly at the Division I level, are flooded with information from students who are interested in playing at their college. You can imagine how many highlight videos the football coaches at Virginia Tech or at Ohio State or Michigan receive. And so it's important to have realistic expectations about, you know, the talent level that the student possesses athletically, and the school's ability to respond when they're receiving interest from the numbers that they do. I think I mentioned this earlier. You will certainly hear from those coaches, and things will really heat up during the junior year if it hasn't heated up earlier. In sports like basketball, but if there are schools that a particular individual is interested in, sending highlight tapes certainly is not something that can hurt. I would just encourage parents and students to have realistic expectations on who they're sending those tapes to.
Brad just hit the nail on top of the head there. We've talked about this issue over and over and over again, okay? And this is not to say or anything about your student athlete. You have to look at your student athlete's true potential, true ability, and possibility of making that team. If you're looking at a team's roster and you notice that the average lineman on that team is the average size, 275 pounds, and your son is 225 pounds, don't think that you're going to be a qualified lineman on that team, not unless he possesses some very special skills that's going to fit him right in with them 275-pound linemen, okay? That, we have to be realistic about that, you know. Look at another school. Open up your options a little bit more. Like I tell you when we have our workshops, and I mention it from time to time at the beginning of some of the shows, you know, you look at about 50 schools and then start narrowing that list down. Because if you just look at a handful and you think that these are the big names and your athlete's looking at a handful because they think that's the big name, but he or she is not able to fit into that lineup correctly, then that's not a good fit. That is not a good fit. So we have to think about that and be very realistic about that. Question back to you again, Brad. When can a parent or a student athlete call one of the coaches?
The student athlete or the parent can call a college coach at the student's expense anytime they want to. And if you happen to catch a coach in the office, you can have a discussion at your own expense anytime. The tricky part is that college coaches cannot call you at their expense until certain periods of time in your high school career, and that varies a little bit by sport. In general, that's following the junior year. So it's important to know that if the coach isn't there when you make that phone call, then you're going to have to call back because that coach cannot return your call.
Okay. I see we finally got somebody got the nerve to come up with a question. Let me see if we can get this call on the air.
Sure.
Caller, you're on the line with the Parents Coach and Parent Network. Who am I speaking to?
Harry Joyce.
Hey, how you doing today, Harry? Everything's good with you?
Yes, sir, most definitely.
Okay, just tell us a little bit about where you're at and then tell us what your question is.
Well, right now, currently, I attend Indiana Tech right now on a partial basketball scholarship. My question is basically, if I was planning on transferring, right, would I still be able to play next year at whatever school I would go to? It wouldn't be me having to sit out no year.
Well, Harry, it depends on what level of school you're going to and how well you're doing academically at your current school. Indiana Tech is that a 2-year college?
It's a private 4-year college.
4-year college. So if it's a 4-year college, if you transfer to a Division I school and want to play basketball, you would have to sit out 1 year at the 4-year school, Division I school, before you'd be eligible to play. It may be possible to go to a Division II school, and if all of the academics line up correctly and the Indiana Tech does not object to you using a one-time exception, it may be possible for that Division II school to certify that you're eligible to play right away there. Similarly, that's the case in Division III. If the academics line up well and you would have been eligible had you stayed at Indiana Tech, you may be eligible right away at a Division III school. But if you're thinking about Division I, you would have to sit out a year at the Division I school.
Okay. Nope. Thank you.
Okay. Did that answer your question there, Harry?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll talk more about that issue. We'll definitely talk more about that issue, and we'll look at some of the other options that you have out there.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for calling in.
No problem.
Brad, you still there with us? Hello, Brad.
I'm here.
Oh, okay. I said it, and all of a sudden it looked like you had dropped out. But, hey, that young man is out at Indiana Tech, and he's looking at trying to come, I guess, a little bit closer back to home and probably going to look at a Division II or Division III. I've talked to him a few times now, and trying to help him out to get situated back to I'm going to have to look up Indiana Tech myself. I got to hear my book somewhere. I forgot exactly whether or not it was a 2 or a 3, or Division 1 or Division 2. But anyway, hey, we thank you for calling in this evening. You got any closing words for us?
Well, I would just reiterate a couple points that we made earlier in the call, and that's really be prepared. Start the process as early as you can, and when I say that, I mean work with those guidance counselors in high school. Make sure the courses you're taking are core courses and will be able to be used for eligibility. And I like what you said just a few minutes ago. Make sure when you're in the recruiting process that you have control of your recruiting process and that you're looking at schools and deciding where you want to go based on how good a fit it is for you. You're going to go to that school, and you're going to be there for 4 or 5 years, so you have to make sure that that's a good fit for you.
Exactly, exactly. And parents, you heard it from Brad himself. He stressed the point just as well as I stressed the point, how important it is for you to be involved. Brad, hey, we thank you for calling in this evening, and you know, I'm going to be calling you on you again.
No, I appreciate you having me on. I'm glad to help.
Hey, we appreciate the NCAA taking the time out to call into our show to support the Parent Coach and Parent Network, and to know that we have allies out there and folks like you out there that's helping our young men and women get through the process and get a better understanding of the process and getting through it the correct way without having all this outside drama and outside distractions and all these other little things. And we're not even talking about that issue. But without having all that involved in them getting through the process, we definitely thank you. And we appreciate it. And like I said, the Parents Coach and Parent Network will be calling on the NCAA again, and hopefully we can get you on again. And if we ever have an opportunity to meet, I will definitely make it my business to come on over and shake your hand. And if you get a chance, I normally have an opportunity to go out to the NBA Top 100 camp, and I know Mr. Turner comes out there. So if you ever get a chance to come out to that, I'm out there every year. Hopefully you get a chance to come out and we can meet there.
No, I appreciate it, and I'm sure our paths will cross. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thank you again, Brad, and you have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Well, parents, we've just had Brad on from the NCAA, and Brad, I got to say it to you after I got you off the air. I just couldn't think of your last name. That's why I just kept it on Brad. And I didn't have my notes right here in front of me, so therefore I was running off the cuff of my sleeve. So I apologize for that part, sir. But we definitely will have you on again, and we'd like the information that you share with us. As well. So, parents, again, it's important that you get involved in the process. Parents, Coach, and Parent Network is here for you. We're going to close out, as always, with my man, Mr. Keith Wright. Take us away, Keith.
up a student of the game. Happy